Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 88, recorded on May 14th, 2018. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll be talking about the unstoppable Francisco Lindor, the watchability, or I think right now tonight, the unwatchability of the Indians, baseball's marketability problem, the outfield, your questions, and so much more. And for anybody listening who's listened to the podcast for any amount of time, you're going to notice a different voice here. Not mine. Unfortunately, I'm still here. But Jason Lucart, who was my co-host for, I think we've been doing it for 2 years now, but he went and got himself a family. He was married. He's got a daughter now, so things got a little busy, so he's stepping back from the podcast for now. But luckily, Let's Go Tribe is filled with a lot of talented, way more smarter people than myself, so I can bring other people on. So my host from now on, until he decides to quit and run away, is Merritt Rolfing. So Merritt, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I don't know.
Your excitement matches my excitement for the Indians tonight.
Watching the Indians. This is going terribly, all right?
See, and you, we were just talking before the show that you managed to miss all of the worst parts of the season because you decided to go and get married. So
I know.
On your honeymoon while the rest of us were watching Alexi Ogando do whatever the hell that was.
Completely forgot he was even on the team. And I just saw his stats. I was like, oh, yeah, that happened. That was a interlude, to say the least, I suppose.
I think it was literally one game, right? That was
1.1 innings or something like that. Yeah. Good Lord.
It felt a lot longer than that. It was not a good outing.
Who are all these people? I was saying before we started, I don't know who any of these relievers are anymore. Like, I was watching the other day and Oliver Drake was on the mound. And I'm, who? Or, I don't know. You keep on drilling into me that I should know who Jeff Beliveau is. And I just don't want to know.
You really should.
So I'm just, I only have so many things I have to know in this world, and I'm just not going to include Jeff Beliveau, and maybe he'll get good. I don't know, but I'm not holding my breath. Other than that, I'm great.
Other than that, depressing, crushing bullpen, it's good. Other good things are happening. So we do actually have, believe it or not, a lot of good things happened this week for the Indians. Prior to the night, it seemed like so long ago the Indians bullpen was destroying everything, but the offense has been really good for a long time, and a big reason for that is Francisco Lindor. Just won his second Player of the Week award. I don't think he'd won before this. I think that was his first one, and it was like actually a really bad week for him because he had a couple bad plays on defense that cost him games. But this second one feels a lot more like, I mean, he deserved the other one, but I'm guessing he likes this one a lot more too because he had a great overall week. He still isn't great on defense. That's the thing we can talk about too. But overall, he's hitting way better. Or just hitting like amazing over the last 2 weeks compared to the first month. The balls that he's hitting up in the air finally getting out, so he's getting all those home runs. What do you think of Francisco Lindor's 2 weeks here? He's got two back-to-back Player of the Week awards under his belt now.
Oh yeah, like you said, I always wonder if the weather really has that much impact. I mean, obviously it does. It's a ball flying through the air. But like, could the cold weather have really been suppressing his power abilities and also the rest of the team for the entire month of April? Maybe. I don't know. He's still striking out an awful lot, although he has cut his strikeout rate from 20.6 in April to just 11.9 this month. So that's encouraging, I suppose. I don't think it's tenable, but you never know. I mean, he could just continue to hit 450 for the rest of the year. I did it in a video game once, and he's more talented at baseball than I am at video games, so I feel like it's doable. I was looking at his numbers earlier today, and over the last 162 games, he has 37 home runs. And every time he does these things, he hits these booming home runs, I'm never going to stop being amazed because this was never what he was supposed to be, you know? He was always supposed to be the guy who does enough on offense where it's nice and he'll be, you know, a good offensive player, but he's never going to be the guy who can carry a team and he's not the type of player who could win an MVP eventually because he just was all defense and he'd need like a Dustin Pedroia sort of a thing. I've said this on many podcasts before, but I was expecting that out of him instead of him becoming truly incredible and probably the best second at this point now with Corey Seager hurt too, probably the best shortstop in baseball. I don't think that's really a bold statement at all, but this has been a streak that doesn't even feel, you know, that's kind of like how in the middle of the Indians' 22-game winning streak last year, it just felt like they were never going to lose again because everything was going. Like, this is just how they play baseball. But this is just how Francisco Lindor plays. Like, at this point, I expect him to be this great all the time. So, yeah, no, it's been great.
it doesn't seem like anything like he's hitting the exact same way as when he was bad. It's just that things are landing where he wants them to more. And like you said, he's striking out less. But I mean, if we take, I mean, I guess we can just put Jose and Frankie anywhere. But are they the best, you think, two infielders anywhere? I'd love to put them, say they're the best shortstop second base combo. But we can't do that right now. I think shortstop third base is not even close.
No, I think they're probably the best but left side of the infield. But I mean, you know, you got I mean, the Astros do still have a reigning MVP, and Carlos Correa is no slouch.
Right.
So there is that. But in this moment, I would say they're the best. But overall, I mean, we're splitting hairs at that point. But they're two of the best players at their position, and probably the combined might that they have together is some of the best you. I don't know. Better than anyone ever expected, and definitely better than we've seen in Cleveland since probably ever, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's weird. Everybody knew, like you were saying, Francisco Lindor would be great on defense. Nobody would be great on offense, and it seemed like a lot of people knew Jose Ramirez would be anything, and now they're two of the best players in the league that happened to be on the team we watched. So that's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's truly stupendous. And I mean, I think that you chalk it up to the Indians thing in particular. As I was mentioning to you before we started recording, the Indians farm system is third or fourth in home runs across the farm system in all of baseball. And this is not an anomaly. They were that way last year too. And I don't have a lot of fear about them having any kind of power outage or offensive outage coming from the farm anytime soon. They just seem to have such a knack at developing guys into great hitters. I mean, Bradley Zimmer, notwithstanding, I mean, he hits the ball real hard. He just doesn't hit the ball very often, I suppose. That's a negative. It's just the, yeah. But no, they're incredible. It's truly incredible to have them on the same team together. And the fact that they're able to overshadow guys like Edwin Encarnacion and Michael Brantley to the extent that they can is, it never stops being just truly stupendous. And they're like 24 and 23 years old or something like that, so.
Yeah, and Ramirez is under contract through, I think, like 2022 or even 2023 with options, and Lindor's for another 3 years. So there's a lot of good in those two. And if we're talking overshadowing, they have more home runs than Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. So I'm sure that won't last forever, but for now, that is a very fun fact.
Well, after tonight, I think Ramirez is now tied for the lead in home runs with 13 in the American League or something like that.
They were both one behind, and now he's tied.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so. Hmm.
And the other kind of interesting thing about Lindor, I found this today because, I mean, and again, another thing we were saying before the show is that it's hard to find things to write about right now. So I was just kind of like looking through Lindor's numbers, everything I could find. And I found one thing. So against lefties, he's a switch hitter, obviously. So when he's batting as a lefty, so when he's facing right-handers, teams are starting to shift on him a lot for some reason. In his plate appearances as a lefty so far, he's been shifted on 22 times. He wasn't shifted on 22 times in his whole career before this, but this year it's like 20% of his at-bats as a right-handed hitter teams are shifting on him. I don't know if that's just because they're seeing the power spike, but I mean, he was pulling the ball a little bit last season, so somebody was thinking, oh, we can get this tiny advantage against such a great hitter, but he's not pulling the ball again this year. It's going everywhere again. It's going too high. The shifts are not, I mean, he's hitting better against the shift than he is not against the shift right now, and most of that isn't even like hitting an opposite field, it's just hitting it so hard.
So yeah, exactly. Hard and in the air. And it's, again, not a thing anyone was expected, but still, there you go. Yeah.
So outside
of... He had a couple missiles just foul today, too. Like, I mean, if you'd straightened three or four of those balls he had out, they all would have been home runs. He just... I don't know. The amount of power he develops is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I do wonder now if... There were reports that he was just kind of bored in the minor leagues. I wonder how much of that is true. Like, after seeing how good he can hit... That sounds more and more likely. So even with Lindor and Ramirez, the Indians team is kind of hard to watch occasionally. They do have these big offensive games. It's not nearly as bad as it was in the early parts of the season where it was all just pop-ups and double plays. But even when the offense is clicking now, there never seems to be everything working at one time with the Indians so far. It's either the offense was bad, now the offense is great, the bullpen's bad, and the starting pitcher's starting to struggle. So this team is just kind of frustrating. It's weird that they're still in first place because the division is so terrible, but I would like the Indians to start being fun for more than like two games at a time and not being just hair-pullingly weird all the time.
Well, and tonight, Monday night as we record this, is just, I think, it was a perfect storm of things, too. I mean, they were facing a very boring pitcher and looking terrible against him in Mike Fiers. the bullpen showed up again. The rando showed up the bullpen, and then Carlos Carrasco had one of his occasional. I think he used to do way more, where he just kind of gets weird and fidgety on the mound and just really slows everything down and just doesn't. I don't know whether he thinks too much or he just really, the pace slows down to just a molasses. And tonight was just a perfect storm of all that. It was just bad baseball, quite honestly. I mean, Kipnis booted a ball. They looked bad on offense. There wasn't a lot of strikeouts from Carrasco. And it's against a terrible team, too. Like, this is a game by all rights they should have just dominated. They were playing five or six AAA players and then a decaying, you know, Victor Martinez on offense, the Tigers were, and yet they hung six runs on them so far, and the game's not over yet, too. So,
and not to mention,
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well,
no,
still,
you go.
So the Tigers, they're. Do you want to guess their top three hitters if you don't remember?
Right now, today, this
no,
year,
their leadoff, their top three hitters in the lineup tonight.
Oh, I know it's Mikey Matuk because I can't put his name, and then no, I got nothing. Because Martinez is fourth, so no, I have no idea.
Nope, Martinez is
John
third.
Green, something like that.
Number four, the cleanup hitter is James McCann.
My God, Pete Cosmer's on that team. Cosmer. I forgot about that.
That is their number two hitter. The slot where you put your best hitter is Pete Cosmer. Is a guy named Goodrum? I don't.
Like, Nico Goodrum, never heard of him. Yeah, again, just who are these? Dixon Machado, I mentioned in an article for another website one time because he was hitting the ball really hard at one point. But nah, this team is nothing. It's a bunch of non names and guys who you'll never see again, and they're just winning 6-2 right now in the top of the ninth with their closer Shane Green on the mound.
As you lean over to read it. I don't even think Tigers fans be mad about us saying this. Like, they realize their team is not good.
That's the whole point of the season, right? Is for them to be terrible. So, right. Yeah, like, it's just...
Is this a matter of the Indians playing to their competition or just random bullshit early in the season?
I mean, I don't know. I've written many times over the years about the Indians' struggles with middle and lefties. You know, just left-handed pitchers who just are hard to hit for whatever reason. But that was because they were so lefty-heavy back in the... like 2012 and 13, even 14. But Mike Fiers is not left-handed. But they were just just look terrible against him. They just look so bad against him. I don't know if it's just one of those nights or what. And that combined with a less than super effective Carlos Carrasco just leads to a dreadful game. That's all.
I'm going to skip ahead to the – because you mentioned the fact that he's right-handed. So we're going to talk about the outfield a little bit here. Brandon Guyer, who – noted not very good against right-handed hitter. I mean, he's great against lefties, but he was in the game. I think there was like two on and one out or something like that, and he was up to bat. There was two outs, and he struck out. Yeah. Like, it's very clear. Bradley Zimmer's not on the disabled list yet, but if he didn't bat there, he is probably dead somewhere or about to go on the disabled list.
I mean, I don't know if they're just giving him a couple more days because at this point, I don't think they can survive on another outfielder on the disabled list. At this point, you have... Who are the healthy outfielders? The guys that were playing tonight, pretty much, right? Plus Rajai
exactly
Davis.
Those are the
healthy guys. Rajai Davis can't hit his way out of a paper bag at this point. But like, it's irritating that it's not hinging, but it's that so much hinges on a free swinging young outfielder who still hasn't proved himself at the plate, and then Lonnie Chisenhall. But it is because they planned so much on platoons and the defensive prowess of Zimmer. You know, holding over for his lack of offensive ability. Plus, now Naquin's hurt too. Like, it's amazing the things that they didn't do in the offseason, which was to take care of the bullpen and take care of the outfield, and how those exact things are biting them in the ass. It's, I don't know if it's bad luck, karma, or just the way baseball works, because if you don't take care of something, it's going to blow up in your face sooner rather than later. But yeah, It's a total mess, and Brandon Guyer should not have been playing tonight, but it's just, again, proof positive of everything that's going wrong with the Indians right now.
And
they're still in first place.
And I forgot that Rajai Davis was even on the base. It's weird they didn't use him there or something. I know. Brandon Guyer wasn't going to hit. I mean, Rajai Davis is not great, but Brandon Guyer against a right-hander is not good.
I mean, the only logic I see is they just – Greg Allen, maybe he's better hitting and – The defense is a push one or the other. Maybe he's got a better arm, and you can't play Rajai Davis in right, obviously, because he's got a noodle on his shoulder. So what do you do with that? In that case, they have, it's at this point, they have too many left fielders on the team, and none of them are the right kind of left fielder. They're all defensive replacement left fielders, and that's not a good thing, Matt. That's a bad thing.
Is that bad? I've been told it's bad.
Limited range and no bet. That's, I have a talent, bad talent, but you know.
And as far as not dealing with the bullpen and outfield in the off season, I think a lot of that is just random injuries that were the two weakest spots they got injured in. I think if Andrew Miller stays healthy, the bullpen mostly stays fine. If everybody in the outfield isn't hurt, although I guess even then, Bradley Zimmer and Tyler Naquin, they should have been relying on them anyway. But now that they are and they're hurt, it's not looking great. And Lonnie Chisenhall, too.
Well, I expected them to rely on Bradley Zimmer because I expected him to start 140 games. Not, I didn't expect him to hit more than a 750 OPS or something like that. But you don't need that out of him because he can cover, he's what, the third fastest guy in all of baseball, and he's 9 feet tall. So I just figured he'd be able to make up for his offensive deficiencies with his defense. Also cover up any holes you'd have with Brantley and whoever plays right. I mean, if you have a great defensive outfield, like a guy who can cover a lot of ground in center, then Chisenhall's arm plays better and Brantley can do whatever he does in left. So, but I don't know. I figured he'd be an everyday player. And I think that injury is a bigger deal than, I think it's a bigger deal than we were really thinking about, because he was a vital piece. And because he gets hurt, then you have to have Naquin play center or whoever. And it's all just a domino effect from there because he gets hurt, and then we have Greg Allen. And we all love Greg Allen, right? We're all big Greg Allen fans here. But
sure. I will say I like Greg Allen, but I've never been the most timid sure ever. I like Greg Allen. I don't get the he's the next Kenny Lofton thing. I don't think he's that good. I do like Greg Allen a lot. I like that he bunted for a hit tonight with two outs and managed to make it. But I've never seen Greg Allen superstar as a real thing.
That would never be a thing, but he's exciting. And that's the magic of the prospect, I suppose, especially a highly athletic prospect who plays center field. Everyone loves center fielders because, they're sexy. So, that's all. Well, unless it's Bradley Zimmer. I don't think those two words have been said in the same sentence ever.
Those legs. We love Bradley Zimmer.
We all love him, but he's just not the handsomest man in the world.
And at Brownbags 99 on Twitter, he actually wanted to know, will Bradley Zimmer last more than 5 years in the league if he doesn't start playing smarter and protecting his body? Has to learn when to play off the wall, not dive when it's unnecessary. I don't think diving is Bradley Zimmer's problem. I think it's sprinting into the wall is what's going to end him.
I'm just going to type in a couple random letters into Google that test out the letters. Grady Sizemore. Oh, let's see. How many years did he last in the league? he got a 10-year career out of it. I mean, granted, only six of them were any good, but... I agree with him. He needs to learn how to know that when the grass turns to dirt, you should probably slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he's exciting and then horrifying to watch all too many times.
I mean, he's going so fast, and he's not like a sturdily built looking guy. He's just all legs and spindly arms, and he's going to crash into walls and hurt himself. I don't think diving is a problem at all. I think he can do that all day.
Yeah.
We've seen him do that a bunch. The only, I guess, real problem is like separating his shoulder like Michael Brantley. Which, by the way, Brantley dove the other night, and I my heart stopped. It wasn't even a dramatic dive. He just sort of flopped to the ground and was like, no,
don't leave your laid arm. Down. Yeah. You stay standing up, sir.
I don't care if they get a triple off you. You do not dive. It's not worth it.
It seems like Zimmer runs into the worst parts of the wall, too, where it's like a stanchion with fencing next to it, and he hits the corner of it's still a padded metal bar, but it seems like he runs into the hardest parts of the wall.
Oh, yeah, especially when you're going as fast as him. It does not matter with that little padding.
Exactly, yeah. It's not going to save anything. If only all those idiotic dives in the wall were leaping catches to rob home runs. What a star he'd be, huh? You'd have 12 of them at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the problem is we need people to start heading over the wall instead of into the wall.
I know. Come on, guys. as it warms up, he'll get healthier. That's all we can count on. This will all just be dingers. That's all we care about here.
So Andrew Miller, he's technically back in the bullpen. He had a pretty rough outing. I don't know if he pitched tonight and get a chance to see, but his first one, he gave up runs in that god-awful comeback against the Royals. And then last night, the night before, he was actually pretty good. Two strikeouts and a walk, which is perfectly fine, I think, for a second game back. I think the first game back was even fine. He was going to get roughed up, and it wasn't a huge deal. But Andrew Miller's back. That makes exactly one exciting bullpen arm right now, I think. how about this bullpen collapse, Merritt?
I mean, it's dreadful, right? We all wrote about it. I'm pretty sure everyone who writes for Let's Go Tribe wrote at least one article about how they're probably going to miss Brian Shaw more than they think they will. And even if Brian Shaw isn't good this year, I haven't really looked at his stats lately. I remember he was having kind of a bad run there for a bit.
But it's a little bad, yeah.
They missed that type of thing, basically. Yeah. They just missed the guy who could just gobble up innings, because I don't think it's a good idea for Andrew Miller to throw more than 50 innings this year at this point. I mean, he's 33 years old. You know, the whole point of this whole season is to just get through it and get to October, because at this point, it sucks to just walk past an entire baseball season, because literally I just wait through winter for it to be summertime again so I can watch baseball. But, you know, if you're watching the Indians because you're a fan, all the meaning is in October, and that's so built around Andrew Miller and Cody Allen and then this hideous mess they have behind them. I mean, I don't think anyone could have expected Dan Otero to be this bad, but he's just been so bad here. And I don't know if that's a luck thing, but he's giving up so many hits, and like a sinker ball pitcher should not be giving up that many home runs.
It's all their like good luck guys. There was Nick Goody, Tyler Olson, Dan Otero. They all just collapsed at once.
Well, and as you wrote about it, like, I believe it was you who wrote about it with Andrew Miller leaving. Like, if he were still there, it wouldn't look quite so bad. But like, they all had to pick up a little bit of the slack. Like, Tyler Olson had to become more than just a loogie. He had to become an Andrew Miller type, and
oh boy,
it didn't. Yeah, Nick Goody again. Like, their problem is they just, I don't know, as I wrote about a couple weeks ago, their inability to develop not even a relief ace, and what they have done. In Cody Allen, at least, but another arm, you know, and even one other arm anywhere. They've done such a good job the last few years of finding one, whether it's Manship or Zepchinski for a little while or someone like that, or even Otero, last year and 2 years ago. But it's such a mess across the board now. And, like, I don't think that they should rely on Andrew Miller or Cody Allen to throw more than 15 innings maybe combined, because that's just not a good idea. Because they need them just to pitch in October, and I just pitch lots of innings in October. We've seen what October looks like now, and it's starters that last five innings. Like, even if the entire rotation gets there healthy, of the big four guys, like, can we really count any of them to be more than a six inning guy? And that's my piece. That's all.
I do think the whole finding relievers thing, it's not just the Indians. I think that's most of the way, I mean, teams are going. I think it's getting harder and harder to develop middle relievers guys, middle reliever guys who either don't turn into starters or aren't just your closer. So I think I think the Dodgers did it last year with a couple guys. They've done it before, like with Joe Blanton and others. It's not working for them this year, like it's not working for the Indians, but I think we're going to see a lot more teams just going out and finding cheap guys. I think teams are going to regret paying for like the Brian Shaws, or they pay him a ton of money, but there's going to be more like Jeff Manships, Dan Otero's, what the Indians are doing. You're just going to have to get lucky with a couple middle reliever guys, I think.
Well, and then you have cases like a team like the Astros, you know, who can either find a guy and then turn him into something great, whether it's by giving him pine tar or actually showing him how to throw a pitch to have more depth in, you know, more depth in its break, as they kind of helped Justin Verlander do. Or the way they developed on purpose a middle reliever in what's his name? Davinsky. Like, the whole point of him was not to be a closer or to be a starter, but to be a 2-3 inning kind of fireman. So I think you'll see more of that over time, but I don't know. I'm wondering if it's actually getting harder to find those kind of diamonds in the rough, because everyone's doing the same exact thing now too, you know? Everyone is on the same. The playing field is about as level as you can get when it comes to analytics and finding kind of just rarities out there. Because what else is there? I mean, I guess you go over to Korea and find some guy that no one has ever heard of pitching for some, you know, Class B team or something like that. But that's not actually how any of this works. So,
I mean, give me a ball. I'll throw it 20 miles an hour and get a strike once in a while. You never know. It could work.
Listen, we saw – Nick Swisher get a save or pitch an inning or something or get a strikeout a while back. You know, it happens every now and again. Position players can do these things. Yeah, I mean, there's this guy out in Anaheim who's a pretty good pitcher, while also hitting a lot of home runs. Why can't you need to get someone like that? That's what they should do.
Can they just get another Shohei Ohtani? Come on. I mean, Dolans, quit being so cheap.
They're everywhere. Yeah. Honestly.
So Danny Salazar comes back and is like any kind of healthy. Is there any real chance he goes to this third, or is he just, you think, a bullpen arm now? Because they need a bullpen arm so much more than a starter, I think.
That's what I hate about the whole Danny Salazar thing is they've repeated time and again because everyone keeps on saying, why shouldn't he go in the bullpen? How about the bullpen? Let's make him a bullpen guy. But the constant refrain, right, is no, he is not a bullpen guy. He's going to be a starter because he needs time to warm up, I guess. Which, I don't know. The human body is an amazing, mysterious thing. And we don't all operate the same exact way. But what is so special about Danny Salazar that he can't be a bullpen guy? I don't know. I mean, it takes, by Andrew Miller's own admission, it takes him 2 or 3 innings to get ready. Like if you go and watch, you know, if you go and go to an Indians game ever and you start watching the bullpen when you need a lead, Andrew Miller might be coming in the 7th inning, but he's up in the 5th doing, you know, towel drills and throwing a weighted ball against the wall and getting his arm and body ready because he's, you know, a million feet a man. So, I don't know. I don't see why it makes any sense for him to be anything but a bullpen guy because that's what they need at this point. They need someone who can cover 2 and 3 innings at a time. But, I don't know. The whole Salazar thing is depressing to me.
I feel like it ties into those reports that he was – I don't think they said lazy specifically, but like he wasn't doing great in between his rehab starts, basically. I think they just kind of thrown up their hands and say, whatever, he's a starter. He can't work as a reliever because we can't get him to do what we want him to do. I mean, that's a huge stretch, maybe, but.
That's been a running thing kind of throughout his career, though, hasn't it? With him just being, with there being kind of veiled criticism to his work ethic. Mm-hmm. Really, throughout, like when he was having struggles, I think it was 2016, maybe 2015, one of those years. But there was just, like Francona was saying, how he just wasn't doing the work. Or maybe it was Callaway saying he wasn't doing the work between starts that you really need to do to be truly excellent.
Yeah,
it's definitely a theme. It's definitely been a theme to his career, and I wonder if that's not something that is holding him back. Like he was saying, he's at this point, maybe he's afraid because, you know, you're a pitcher and your arm starts going, then that's your meal ticket and your career's over. And he has yet to get his real big payday or anything like that. I mean, at this point, maybe he'll never see it. I don't know. Which is a sad thing to say, but
I mean, when is he a free agent? It's only a couple more years, right?
I mean, probably two. I mean, that's the thing. But what's a couple more years? If all of a sudden your arm's gone, then no one's going to want you, right?
Right.
But if he could turn himself into a relief pitcher, like, then all of a sudden a couple more years is only 180 innings instead of, you know, 500 or 600, which is better for your arm, even if it's not the ideal situation for you.
So 2021 is his free agent year. So, I mean, he's got a couple years to build himself up again. But
yeah. He's so small. how high can he really build himself up, man? You know,
he can just stand on Bradley Zimmer's shoulders and get really tall.
Oh, no. You created some sort of horrifying golem, man. No. I don't know. Cause what's the reports now? When is he supposed to be back? I was looking at the DL list a little while ago, but it's going to be, until June, I think he's shut down now, right? He's supposed to be shelved until the beginning of June, so we have another couple weeks before we probably hear anything.
Yeah, wasn't he on the 60-day DL? Or was that someone
else? So, shoulder problems are always bad news.
Yeah.
Especially for someone, you know, who's, again, his size and does what he does.
So one of the things me and Jason always talk about, I guess I kind of did because I was always harping on it the most, is that I hate how almost unmarketable baseball players seem to be, or how bad MLB is at marketing them.
Yeah, they're so bad at it.
They're awful. Like one of their latest examples.
Market the most boring guys too. They're like, all right, my problem is their marketing of the home run so much. That's my real problem. I wrote an article about this last year about how triples are the best and how I saw like 5 triples run to Camden Yards one time. And it was super great. Home runs are boring, Matt. Home runs and strikeouts are boring. Anyway, continue.
Oh, no, I'm fully with you with that. I get that it's the best way to win. I'm not arguing against that. But I really want some breakthrough to happen where we realize, oh, we can win better with more just putting the ball in play. I want that to happen. I don't expect anybody to do it because it's not right. But
I remember that was so boring when the Royals won their championships. Like, now everyone's going to be putting the ball in play. Yeah. Like, no one's going to do that. They won by accident. This doesn't make any sense. Everyone's confused here.
That and starting pitching. I hate bullpenning so much. I get that it works. It's the right thing to do. It wins. I hate it.
Well, you know, we're just men outside of time.
I know.
But no, yeah. But to your point, they are bad at marketing. I don't know why Aaron Judge. I know why Aaron Judge is on the cover of MLB The Show. I get it, but it should have been Jose Altuve, perhaps the most exciting player in baseball.
Yeah,
he's not the best player in baseball, but he's definitely the most like dynamic or up there.
I would much rather watch like a ball land between the center field and right fielder and Jose fly around the bases than Aaron Judge just hit another ball 700 feet. Like, it's not even that amazing anymore.
After a while, you're like, everyone's doing that.
Yeah.
Not everyone. It is still amazing. I'm being ridiculous here, but literally there's now two of them on one team. Like, this is obscene to me.
Well, I mean, you can only have – there's only one way a home run can go is you hit it hard and it goes far. Like, there's so many things that can happen when you put a ball in play that are exciting and so much about baseball that's good like that. But
and what was the best home run of the 2016 season? That's right. Tyler Naquin's walk-off inside the park home run.
Yeah, right? The one that didn't even leave. That's the only
good hands one. Down. Yeah, best hit of the entire year.
Yeah,
by any player anywhere.
That's best hit of a few years. What was better than that hit, like in previous years or since? I can't think of any.
Well, to be quite honest, the Jose Bautista home run in the postseason was pretty great.
Yeah, when he flipped the bat. Yeah,
that was really cool. But you know, that's a thing happening beyond just hitting the ball, and there was emotion and things like that too.
So, that was also the postseason. I mean, if you put Tyler Naquin's hit in the postseason, that's way better.
Someone's head would explode. Yes. No, exactly.
But so the real reason that the MLB sucks this time is they're warning players about cleats. Mike Clevenger was the first one to tweet it, that he had a bunch of artwork drawn on his shoes. MLB said their words were non-conforming illustrations, which how much more authoritarian can you get than that wording? But
bunch of nerds. That's what I hear. Yeah.
And then Ben Zobrist and others came out and said the exact same thing. And this is kind of a new thing. I mean, they haven't been that strict on enforcing it. I don't know how many people have been drawing on their cleats necessarily, but I guess it's a thing that MLB has decided they don't like all of a sudden. And they released a statement about it, actually, which said, "We have shoe regulations that were negotiated with the union in the last round of bargaining. If players have complaints about the regulations, they should contact their union which negotiated them. We have informed the union that we are prepared to negotiate rules, providing players with more flexibility," blah, blah, blah. So I have two kind of separate theories about this. I don't think they're doing
it. It's going to cause a strike. That's what's going to happen.
The cleats.
Shoe strike.
So I think either they saw that. Who's that Astros pitcher that had one that was just a train wreck? It was like glued together and.
Was that Trevor Morton? I think?
Oh, you got to find that. He was responding to Trevor Bauer. Well, not directly Trevor Bauer, but he had something on his cleats. It looked like it might have been a sticky substance. So afterwards, he...
Oh, yeah, okay.
He had a video, yeah. So I think either MLB saw that and they were horrified and like, we're going to start enforcing shoe rules now.
Or Lance McCullers, that's who it was.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's the one. Or the kind of conspiracy theory is that the owners are just getting like any little bit of leverage they can, because their wording in their statement kind of like puts the onus on the player association. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when they go to negotiate, it's not. I don't think it's going to cause a strike itself, but it's going to be one of many things where they can say, "Oh yeah, we'll give you this. If you want the cleats, you just got to give into this." And then if they don't do it, it's going to reflect poorly on the Players Association. And then MLB can just say, "Oh, we tried to negotiate, but they wouldn't do it." I mean, it's just purely leverage at this point, I think, because I don't think they care about shoes.
No, I don't. I mean, unless they're total sticks in them, but no, I think that does make a great point. I think that it could just be they're looking ahead. You know, they're playing their 4D chess here while the MLB or while the Players Association is trying to put on new shoes. And that's actually a good point. They're going to get screwed again in negotiations, aren't they?
Yeah, these are going to be ugly this time around. There's so much that's changed.
Yeah, I know. So many things that just did not go right in, you know, everything. I don't know. They expected to go right, went wrong. With the qualifying offers and all the what else went terribly bad for the players?
Well, the main thing they need to do is just start paying their younger players. Like, they always focus on veterans, but it's clear like every team focusing on analytics now realizes that over 30 players, you don't pay them Pujols money. There's no reason to anymore. You can get basically the same production from a young guy for cheaper. So I mean, like, raise arbitration prices.
It's gonna end up breaking the union too. I was talking about this with. I was talking at. my wife about this while she just sat there quietly. about how if more and more young players see that the union didn't have their best interests at heart when they were younger, then why would they support the union when they were older? You know, I mean, that's how so many unions in so many different industries have died over the time, is because hubris with the older members trying to keep only what they have and not caring about the younger generation that is going to be there in 10 years that will continue to support them and keep their pensions alive and things like that. So,
meanwhile, your wife's looking at her book going, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, well, she was driving at the time, actually, but yes.
You had her trapped in a moving vehicle.
Oh, exactly. Oh, yeah, of course. Randy got baseball and labor law, my two favorite things. It's fantastic. But no, that's like, it's definitely something you could see happening in, you know, the next, I don't know with the next negotiation, but, you know, two or three down the road, if they don't take care of the young players, then that will definitely happen. And this, like you said, this is an interesting way for the owners to subvert any protections for younger players by saying, okay, fine, you can wear, you know, fun shoes and, you know, we can have a wider selection of walk-up music and, I don't know, other weird quality of life stuff that doesn't actually matter in the grander scheme of things, but it makes you feel good in the moment. So,
yeah. Yep. And it's, I mean,
I liked his shoes too, by the way. They were really cool.
Yeah. He had his Mother's Day ones too, which I don't think he wore them on Mother's Day because he didn't pitch. So I don't know if he's going to get in trouble for that, but there was a charity that messaged him. It was Pink something. Mm-hmm. It was like Go Pink. But they're going to have him, I guess if he gets fined, like donate money to that charity for it, which I think will be really cool.
Cool.
I would hope MLB would just say, sure, pay them instead of us, but I don't even know anymore.
And the Zobrists wore black cleats and they fight, and there's like, this is against the rules because you can't wear all black shoes. Like, yeah.
And I think Aaron Judge wears black too, right?
Well, I mean, it's a team color, I think, it might be dark blue or something like that, but at least 51% of the exterior of each player's shoes must be the club's designated primary shoe color.
The league has a primary shoe color, Merritt.
Well, the team has a primary shoe color, Matt. So I'm going to start watching the Indians games and see what their primary shoe. What do you think? Blue? Probably blue. Maybe it's white.
Red. I've seen Kluber wear a lot of red.
Who's out there measuring the percentage of shoe coverage? Does this include the sole of the shoe? If that's the case, you can make that. You just make that whole thing just a different color, you know, and then you can just do whatever we want with the top. I mean,
I bet it's built in StatCast. Like, it can track the color.
They haven't released that public information yet, though, because they keep on not showing us everything. Yeah. You know, I really hate StatCast. I love it, but I want it. I know this is a refrain that many have said, but it's getting ridiculous. They'll tweet out this neat image. They're like, you can look at this soon. And I'm like, when? When can I look at this? Quit showing me these things. Give me one.
Yeah, anyway. I do like all the – it's almost getting to the point where if I can't see exit velocity, I don't like it as much. But no, somebody said that like before the season, like if you, it's going to eventually be just like pitch speed. The series in Puerto Rico was torture because of that. Like I'm already addicted to StatCast stats.
Did they even have pitch velocity in that? Because I don't think they did. Because I was trying to write an article about a game down there, and like there was just a huge blank period, and like one of the pitchers starts was like, what happened here? Like
I thought they had velocity. I just don't think they had StatCast anything.
That's right. Yeah, because they didn't have the pitch types. That's what they didn't have. Yeah. So like. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
How infuriating. It's really throwing off a lot of percentages here. It's bugging the hell out of me.
Just get StatCast in Puerto Rico. Come on.
Come on, Puerto Rico. I know you have some other things going on right now.
Focus on this first.
What about dumb radar for your baseball stadium?
Worry about food and electricity later. We need to see how hard Francisco Lindor hit this ball.
I need to know about how the pitch broke. I need to know.
All right, Merritt, let's wrap this up with some few questions. Everybody always asks you on Thursday on Facebook. I don't think I did Facebook this time, but Twitter gave us a ton of good questions. I think you all have them built up forever, but you can either do that or email me at mattr.lines@gmail.com. Actually, I think I don't know. Just email that one. It's fine. I never checked the other one. If you've emailed sbnletsgotribe@gmail.com, I've never checked it. I'm sorry. just email my email account.
We have an email address. We don't know what's there.
I made it once and I was like, I'm never going to look at this. I want to get like an actual at Let's Go Try. That'd be cool. But that's a whole other thing. But anyway, on Mondays, we'll ask you guys for questions. You can always send them over. We'll take a few of the best ones and answer them. First, at Joel Hammond. Everybody might know him, friend of the podcast. He wanted to know, Gonzalez has been playing well lately. Is his outburst at the plate sustainable? Any chance he starts playing more in platoon with Kipnis? That's an interesting question.
And so the expectation is no, right? Because we've seen it. It feels like we've seen enough of Eric Gonzalez to think that, no, we know everything about him. But at the same time, he has batted a total of
30.
No, I'm just thinking over his entire major league career, 162 times. He has played in 100 games in his entire major league career. So, honestly, no. We really don't know anything about him. Granted, his batting average on balls in play right now is .526. So, to answer Joe's question, no, I don't think that is sustainable. But, again, he could be changing. I just finished writing an article about Francisco Cervelli a little while ago. And this is a 32-year-old we're talking about who made a lot of money already and already had a role in baseball. But he's completely changed the way he plays baseball. Haven't really been paying attention to what Gonzalez is doing. His line drive rate is up 11 points from last year. Is that sustainable also? I don't know. That would lead to a very high batting average on balls in play. I think line drives end up being hit like it's like a batting average of like 600 on them or something like that. So yeah. I don't know what his split numbers are like either. But I'd prefer it to be Yandy Diaz on the team.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I'm not shy about saying that, but no, I don't think he's going to be on the team for. I mean, I don't think Eric Gonzalez is going to be anything more than what he is, which is too bad, because he seems neat and nice. Seems like a nice enough guy.
He's pretty neat, yeah.
Well, I don't know, he's got big ears. Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't think the stats are close enough. But if it was close enough to maybe push him to taking over Kipnis, I don't think he would just because of who's managing the Indians right now. We know Francona likes his guys, and Jason Kipnis is one of his guys. And he also likes having bench players who can play everywhere, and Eric Gonzalez can play everywhere. So I think the way the team's set up now is like peak Terry Francona. So I don't think even if it was close, Eric Gonzalez would be taking over the starting spot, which I don't think is terrible because I hope to God Jason Kipnis bounces back. And I also think Gonzalez is a really good option off the bench because he can play everywhere. He seems pretty good at coming in to pinch hit. So I really like him off the bench. I just don't think he's a starter, at least on the Indians.
If you go on Fangraphs to the Indians leaderboards, you have to go to the second page to find Jason Kipnis' stats.
Wasn't at one point he had like double digit, or not even double digit, but like one of the lowest WRC pluses?
It was really bad. I mean, it's 38 right now.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. That's not good at all.
And he's got to bounce back, right? He was on base a couple times tonight, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's walking at his career average rate. He's striking out at about his career average rate.
Yeah.
Batting average on balls in play is 90 points below his career average rate. It's just we don't know what to expect out of Jason Kipnis anymore because he keeps on getting hurt. And you're like, well, he bounced back again. Who knows? We'll see.
And I'm also very glad that the Indians picked Eric Gonzalez over Gio Urshela. I don't know if they picked it just because of the couple good games that Gonzalez had, but if that's the case, I'm fine with it because I loved Giovanni Urshela on defense, but I had enough of watching him try to bat.
No, sure. No, I mean, I agree with you. I didn't need any more Gio Urshela in my life. Feels mean to say he had his chance and he totally blew it by tanking batted ball after batted ball in the ALDS last year, but
that's pretty much the case. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So at Sox Machine Josh, he wants to know how excited are you the Indians will play the White Sox at the end of May. Josh is he does a White Sox podcast for Sox Machine, so he knows how the White Sox are going right now. But in general, this is kind of an interesting question because the Indians haven't played a ton of division games so far, and their division is it's called Garbage. Not great.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's more diplomatic.
But then they play the White Sox at the end of May. They play the Twins as a makeup game, and then they play the Royals also in May, and then they just play a ton of intra-division games, which are going to be, I mean, all of June. I'm looking at the series now. There's one against Milwaukee. And a series against St. Louis and the A's. Other than that, it's all the AL Central. So they could make up a lot of ground and just leave the AL Central in the dust in June, I think. Or it could go terribly and they'll be like in last place. I don't know. But if they get it together in June, that could be where they pretty much seal it and can mostly let off the gas for like the last couple months, I think, unless some other team like the Twins keep being annoying or something. But it is nice the schedule the Indians have just based on how bad the division is. And the fact that they got through all the cold months playing the good team, so who cares? Mm-hmm. So they can just dominate the bad teams later on. I think that's good.
I'm I'm hopeful Moncada is healthy. I'm hopeful Garcia is healthy. Because there's a lot of fun players. That's the thing, too. I mean, I just assume the Indians are going to womp on them because their pitching consists of... but offensively, there's a lot of fun. I guess the thing, I hope Corey Kluber hits against or pitches against them because Jose Abreu beats the hell out of Corey Kluber, and it baffles me and amazes me that someone can so consistently hit maybe the best pitcher in the American League right now. But I to answer its question, I'm very excited because I like the White Sox. I watched a lot of White Sox games when I lived in Chicago, and they have a lot of good, fun, young players. I think early in the season they were hitting the ball harder than I think any like – or they were one of the hardest hitting teams in all of baseball, and it's kind of continued. This Matt Davidson character is a very interesting figure.
Yeah, this is supposed to be they're not their big competing year, but like their first getting a peek of what they could look like year, and it's not
right.
Going great.
Well, no, definitely not, but there's winks, I suppose. Like, you know, they have all these pieces there that you're like these guys could be really good. Like Yoan Moncada is gonna be maybe their big star. They have their I'm not gonna hurt you too bad offensively, great defensive shortstop in Tim Henderson. Davidson's a nice surprise. I'm wondering if they'll trade Jose Abreu this year. I don't want to turn this into a talking about the White Sox podcast too much. I'm talking about the White Sox. Their pitching is so bad. That's the thing. All their pitching is what, a year or two away, right? Like Lopez might be breaking through this year. Giolito is looking like he's not good right now, but maybe he'll figure it out.
But then a lot of other come up. That's their big one at this point is Kopech.
But... Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't think we probably. I mean. Definitely won't see him this year.
Yeah, he's not great in AAA right now.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, again, probably a year or two away. So, we'll see what they look like more, I think, next year, obviously. But there's a lot of neat young offensive pieces that kind of tell a story of future goodness, or at least not badness. So, and their window is perfect, too, because they're going to get good just as the Royals continue to be terrible. The Indians kind of fall off, and probably the Tigers are another 2 years behind them. As far as that, so they're gonna have the center to themselves. I think probably for at least a couple of years.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe. So the Indians will win forever. Anyway, go on.
We'll finish up with maybe just a short, easy one here. So at Feed Your Tribe, which is the official Indians food account, they want to know what's your favorite food here at the stadium. I know neither of us live in Cleveland. I don't know if you ever did at one point, but I haven't been to a whole lot of Indians games, unfortunately. But I had some pretty great nachos from Loco's Nachos, I think it was. And I also had, I don't even think it's like a stadium food, but there was like a Food Network truck there, and I had a hot dog called the Clevelander, which had a bunch of stuff on it, which was good. I don't know. I've never eaten a bunch of food at the ballpark. So if anybody's listened this far and you want to suggest something to me, I'm all for that.
I've been to Progressive Field once, and it was in 2007.
Well, there you go. So, what was your favorite food, Merritt?
I'll be honest with you. I turned 21 like 3 days prior, so... I'm not too clear on what I was doing there.
There was baseball, probably.
I saw the game 5 of the ALCS, or team 4. Game 4 of the ALCS, so that was great. But I had a lot of fun. Yeah. That's all. I ate a bunch of hot dogs at the Bowie Bay Sox Park the other day. Did you? So there's that. I went to a Bowie Bay Sox game. I saw the Bay Sox play the Hartford Yard Goats. And let me tell you, the Bay Sox are the AA affiliate of the Orioles. The Orioles do not have a lot coming down the pipeline. Ooh, they're bad.
Their whole organization is a mess.
They're going to be bad for a while. It's going to be great.
All right, Merritt. That was a pretty good first show. Thanks for agreeing to do this. I know you're going to do a lot of writing, and you got Beyond the Block Score you're doing at, and now you got a wife and everything. What are you doing with your life, Merritt?
Just trying to make it, man. You know how it is.
Well, all right. We will talk to everyone. I'll talk to you next week, Merritt.
All right. You know what I mean.